Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com. And we're so excited to be interacting with so many of you, literally thousands of people, because you're joining in on our webinars and our seminars online, and then there are people who are coming on ground. We have lots of lectures on ground in this season in Florida. Just go to naturalnurse.com calendar. And we also have many things not on the calendar, such as individualized courses where you can learn to be a holistic practitioner. You can learn herbal medicine. You can work towards your registered herbalist certification. We are a mentor with the American Herbalist Guild. You can start with a natural nurse herbal certification course, which is a 5-session course, or you can have a private consult about your own health and wellness for yourself and your family and how you might integrate natural remedies into your life. So all of that is available by going to naturalnurse.com. Click on calendar for classes, look at books for the many, many books that we have. And of course, look at radio shows, because we have archives of all our shows. You can also reach all our shows at progressiveradionetwork.com. And today's guest, we are so happy to bring on board. We are having as our guest today a longtime friend, neighbor and colleague of mine, and her name is Beth Fitteni. Beth is the founder and director of Green Inside and Out, a not-for-profit organization. Beth has a master's degree in environmental law, which is pretty impressive, and yet she doesn't put any letters after her name. I don't know why. We're going to have to change that. But she went to Vermont Law School. And she also has 20 years of experience working in environmental movement for various nonprofit organizations. She's worked at Renewable Energy Long Island, the Sustainability Institute at Molloy College, and with Beyond Pesticides. And she coordinated educational programs, energy policy work groups, and national conferences. Today we're having her on as a guest because she just came out with a new book. The name of the book is The Green Wardrobe Guide, Finding Eco Chic Fashions That Look Great and Help Save the Planet. Beth also has a radio show on WUSB Stony Brook, and she was awarded the Long Island Sierra Club Environmentalist of the Year, the Woman of Distinction Award by the Town of Oyster Bay, the EPA's Environmental Quality Award for her work in creating educational materials on children's environmental health. And also, she's been listed on the Long Island Business News Top 40 Under 40 Award. So thank you so much, Beth, for joining us today. Hello, is Beth there?
Hi, thanks so much for having me. My pleasure to be here.
Okay, you're good. So let me ask you this, Beth. You actually have a very significant master's degree in environmental law from Vermont Law School. And I'm just wondering, you don't list that after your name.
Sometimes I do. It depends on the forum. But yes, it's an MSEL, Master of Studies in Environmental Law. It was a great school, Vermont Law School.
and that is impressive, very impressive. And your entire bio really is amazing, because you have stayed on track. And I know you have also instituted actual changes in policy. And I want to talk about that first. And of course, we'll talk about your new book, What a Great Word, Eco Chic. But tell us what you did in the cleaning, the people go to the cleaners. What do you call that? The dry cleaning.
The dry cleaners.
Industry. Yeah, tell us about that project, because it took you years, and yet it is making progress.
Yes, thank you. So finally, it did take a few years. But, a few years ago, I got an inquiry from someone saying, my dry cleaner is saying that they're green. What does that mean? And then a few other people asked me, and I said, let me look into it. And then once I looked into it, I realized, wow, this is really an interesting topic. So I was able to put together a white paper on that subject and explore some of the alternatives to perchloroethylene, which is what's usually used, and that's a carcinogen. And there are a few alternatives. So one of the local legislators in Suffolk County was very interested in this subject, and she said, you know, what can we do? So the first thing that came to mind was, well, we can at least let people know. So she proposed a bill to have signage be put up at dry cleaners, and the bill passed in June of 2016, and it took a while for the health department to come up with the actual sign because they had to do a lot of research to make sure they categorize things, because even when we were working on the bill, the dry cleaning industry was showing up saying, PERC is safe, you know, we don't need this kind of stuff. So they wanted to make sure it was correct. But we just recently got the sign approved by the legislature, so within 90 days, dry cleaners in Suffolk County will have signage telling you what they use and how safe it is in relation to human health and the environment, which is a great success.
It's amazing.
I want to thank Legislator Kara Hahn for her efforts on that.
So now, how will that be indicated? This is obviously, I just want to tell our listeners, because we have listeners all over the country and the world, I will say hi to all of you. But this is really only in Long Island. But what will happen? People will walk in, and how will they know? Will they have to ask? Will it be posted? Is it a teeny weeny postage size stamped sign, or how will they know?
Nope, it's a letter-sized piece of paper, 8.5 by 11, and there'll be two. There has to be one right by the register and one in another obvious place on the door, you know, near where you walk into the facility. So it's very exciting, and it'll be color-coded, like green are the better options and red are the ones you want to kind of avoid. So I'm sure there will be some dry cleaners that push back on this, and they're not going to like it, but maybe it'll push the industry in the right direction anyway as a whole, which is better for the workers. So very exciting. And we looked at San Francisco, and we looked at other cities, and it is kind of a pioneering effort, so we hope it's a model for other communities.
So that is so exciting, Beth, because what a wonderful use. So basically, those dry cleaners who are using less toxic, safer materials will have an automatic advantage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then people can use their money, like they do, let's say, choosing organic food or choosing something that says non-GMO. By choosing those things, it pushes the availability of them ahead.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, you can look for dry cleaners that say they actually use it's not dry cleaning, it's called wet cleaning. That's one of the greener options, where it's an actual machine that uses water and a detergent to clean the clothes. But it works the same as dry cleaning chemicals, but just safer.
You know, that is so great. And I know we talked about this literally years ago. So
yep.
I am very, very excited that it's come to fruition through your efforts. And I know sometimes you get frustrated working within the system, but this is something that was done actually within the system, correct?
Yep. Again, it was through Kara Hahn's efforts as a legislator to take the initiative. So she gets a lot of the credit. You know, we had a lot of meetings to work this all out, but it's finally going to happen. So it's exciting.
So let me ask you, Beth, when are you going to become a legislature?
Oh, some people have suggested it. It's, you know, in the back of my mind, maybe someday, we'll see. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. But, you know, I've been pushing your co-host also on your radio show on Stony Brook University Station, WUSB. I think Bob Benedetto and you should both run, because look, you make things happen. You make things happen. You're aware of the kinds of things that need to be done. So anyway, I just want to throw that out there to you for my
thank
support.
You.
I couldn't vote for you because I live in Florida, but nonetheless, thank you so much for all your efforts and for making things actually happen, which must be very supportive for you, because very often when you're into what you're into, it's like knocking your head against the wall.
Yes. It takes several years to see legislation happen often. So this was, this was a great success.
Yes, that's great. So Thank you so much for that. So let's go into, of all the things that you know and all the brilliance that you have on so many levels, why did you write a book called The Green Wardrobe Guide, Finding Eco Chic Fashions That Look Great and Help Save the Planet?
Well, years ago in the late 90s, I was working for an organization down in Washington, D.C., then called the National Coalition Against the Misuse of Pesticides, or NCAMP, and they've since changed their names to just Beyond Pesticides, much, much simpler. And I learned so much about the use of pesticides in this country and abroad, and that's where I started to realize that 10% of the world's pesticide use is used on cotton because of the boll weevil. It's an insect that likes to eat the cotton. So most people, you know, were starting to become aware even then of eating organic food because of what we, you know, ingest into our bodies, but they weren't thinking about, well, what about all this cotton that I'm wearing right onto my on my skin? And how it, you know, if you wash it, what happens when it, you know, gets washed out into our waterways? So then I started finding organic cotton clothes and hemp and bamboo and a few other fabrics we can talk about later. And I thought, wow, this is so fantastic that these things exist, but most people don't know. And so that's where I just got the inspiration. I was in a little shop in Greenport, Long Island, that sold a lot of these type of clothes. And I said, you know, someone should write a book about this. And the owner of the store said, yes, why not you? So I took her advice and I did it, and the book itself took me 8 or 9 years to write from start to finish with all the photography and everything that went into it. So I really want to thank her, Joanne Tamman, from that little shop, and I dedicated the book also to my grandma, who was a seamstress, and to all the workers in the fashion industry so that they may have a healthy environment. So that was my inspiration.
That's a great story, because I always wondered, how did you narrow it down? Because your interest in the environmental lifestyle is so broad. Yet I think this book, and I know you worked on it for a long time, and I know when I've written books, because I've written 15 books, one
wow.
of the first things is to, yeah, it's a lot of work, is
unbelievable.
To investigate the topic to see what your basically competition is in that topic. And mm-hmm. I don't know that there's so many books about, you know, like what you're talking about, the Green Wardrobe Guide.
No, exactly. And that's what I thought. I said, you know, nobody knows about this. And at the time when I started it, there were only one or two other books. Now there's been quite a few since, maybe a dozen more. But, you know, it's something else that people need to consider because it has such a huge impact. In fact, the clothing industry is the second largest polluter after the fossil fuel industry.
Wow, really?
Which is major, yes, because of all the chemicals that are used and the water and everything else that goes into it.
So you mean it goes into it in terms of growing, let's say, the cotton? And would that be just organic cotton or just, you know, the wool? I mean, in what ways?
Well, for one thing, there are a lot of chemicals that are used in the fashion industry. So chemicals are used to, well, first of all, we can talk about polyester and nylon and acrylic. These are synthetic fibers. So they're made actually from plastic. They're made from plastic polymers, which is made from oil. So we're actually wearing clothes that are made from petrochemicals. So that's one thing to be aware of. So that's why in the book I focus a lot on natural fibers that are plant-based. And the other thing is that, like I said, there are so many chemicals that are used in the creation of our clothing. So there are chemicals used to remove oils from the fabrics, to break down cellulose, to add color, or to make them stain-proof. So for example, carcinogenic aromatic amines are used in these azo dyes, especially in very bright colored clothing. Some clothing is treated post-production to make it less prone to wrinkling. So this often involves the carcinogenic chemical formaldehyde. Some clothes are made waterproofed, so they use fluoropolymers, or they even use flame retardants on some clothing. leather is the tanning of it uses chromium, which is a carcinogen. Phthalates can actually be used in the T-shirt printing, like when you touch a T-shirt that has like ink, like a rubbery sort of print on it. That's a type of plastic as well, which can contain phthalates, which are hormone disruptors. So all of this, you know, like you said, growing the crops also can use significant quantities of water. So there's a substantial amount of effluent that is created, and a lot of times this is in the countries where these clothing are being produced. The clothing is being produced, which is often India and China, especially those two countries, and Bangladesh.
So there, of course, in those countries, they have even less, let's say, environmentally protective legislation. So however, I think here in this country, we are moving towards having much less environmental legislation recently as well.
Yes. Unfortunately, that is the case. I recently wrote a blog post about that in particular because I thought, especially with the midterm election coming up, that people should be aware. I don't like to be too political, but, you know, when you cast your vote, that there are some laws that are actually being overturned and weakened, like water protections in this country. So it's another thing we want to keep on in our mind when we're in the voting booth.
Oh, tell us about your blog. How do people find your blog?
Sure, thank you. So it's on greeninsideandout.org, and you just go to the link that says blog, and there's a whole blog that I've been keeping for the last few years on all different environmental topics, and I especially focus on consumer usable information, like choices that we can make as consumers every day about products that we buy or services that we buy that, you know, could impact your health or the environment.
That's good. And so
yeah.
Is it searchable if people wanted to know about a particular issue?
Sure. Yep. It covers all kinds of green products. But if I guess the best way is just to go to the greeninsideandout.org. But there's all kinds of topics in there.
Well, that's good. And this is a way people can really increase their knowledge about these things. I'm sure a lot of people did not even think about, even if they're in an organic lifestyle, how you would choose fashion in a way that is more sustainable.
Right, absolutely. And I wanted to add, too, that this year I was able to do a TED Talk at Adelphi University, which I was really grateful for. It was a wonderful opportunity. And they've since created a video, which is on YouTube, and it's called The Toxic Talk, Your Power Over Pollutants. So it's a 15-minute sort of, you know, summary of 15 years of work on environmental health. If anyone's interested to listen to that, it's also on the website, greeninsideandout.org, or on YouTube.
That sounds like a very good way that people can watch it and learn about these things, because you do focus on plant-based fabrics, but, you know, that may not always be so clean either.
Right, absolutely. So you know, there's a few issues with this, too, that I should have mentioned as well. Like, when you talk about chemicals being used in clothing, it affects our health since we're wearing the clothes. There's not actually a lot of study on the long-term effects of exposure from clothing into the body, so I expect there'll be more study on that. But it's just common sense, since our skin is the largest organ. But, of course, it affects the people, you know, the workers that live near these areas, that these chemicals go into the water. So there's human labor issues. And there's a wonderful film called River Blue that goes more into this. So one thing that consumers can do is look for the fair trade label. You know, there's a New York City Fair Trade Coalition, and that means that the workers are more protected when you see that label, which is important. But yeah, absolutely. Like cotton, most people think, well, that's a natural product, right? It's grown from the land, which is true. But unfortunately, a lot of it, like I said, is sprayed and sometimes can be GMO as well, genetically modified. So.
That is so true. Now, in terms of organic cotton, organic, to have the label organic, doesn't that necessitate it being non-GMO?
Yes, exactly. So organic cotton, basically just like when you see the label on food, means that the cotton was grown without the use of synthetic chemicals, without pesticides or fertilizers, or, you know, not except for natural fertilizers, of course. And it's exciting because now this organic cotton, which is also not GMO, is being grown in several countries. So it's grown here in the USA, in the South, in India as well, it's very popular, Turkey, Peru, and Egypt. So it's growing. It's becoming, you know, it's a small percentage of the overall cotton market, but it's growing. And it's exciting, too, because there are some big companies that are starting to use it, like Nike had pledged several years ago that it was going to use up to 10% organic cotton in its products by 2015, and they've continued with that. And even H&M, so they're a fast fashion brand, which means, you know, they produce a lot of clothing very rapidly. Most of the time it is in sort of, you know, what we would consider sweatshop conditions, although they're under a lot of pressure to change that, and they've been making some efforts. But even they have, because of these, the consumer pressure, they said they will only use water-conserving, recycled, or organic cotton by 2020. So it's very exciting to see those kind of changes happening. And one thing that consumers can look for is the label that says Global Organic Textile Standard, GOTS.
Oh, okay. It looks like a little T-shirt. Okay, tell me about that. I never heard of that one. What is that called?
Yep, it's the GOTS, GOTS, Global Organic Textile Standard. And basically, it just means that it's a voluntary standard that companies can, you know, adhere to. And it means that, again, it certifies that the cotton used is grown organically. And it also prohibits the use of child or forced labor. There are stringent restrictions on finishing agents and water use because cotton is a very water-thirsty crop. So it's a really great guideline to look for. It's like a green circle with a picture of a little shirt in it. So you can look for that on the label.
Oh, well, that's a good thing to know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it's great.
And so, obviously, the manufacturers have to actually pay extra to have that on there.
Yes, I believe they probably do. I forget the organization that started this label, but they probably do. So it's worth, you know, it's definitely worth a little extra for that label.
Right. So, and therefore, it's a primary product. Now, you know, all these things you're talking about, and I really support people looking into it, but there is an additional cost. So it's not going to be, you know, for people who are very income, you know, really struggling with their income.
Right. Sometimes, you know, it definitely, over the last few years, the prices have come down for these products. But at the beginning, yes, they were much more expensive. Depending on, you know, compared to what, you know, compared to Nordstrom's or big stores like that, maybe it's equivalent. But even sometimes H&M now is carrying some of these organic cotton T-shirts at an affordable price. Even Walmart carries some organic cotton. You can find it in Marshall's sometimes as well. So it's just a matter of looking for it, or you can find it online. And in the book, we created a whole list of over 200 places where you can find these eco fashions across the country. There's a state-by-state directory of both, you know, brick-and-mortar stores as well as online. So now the prices are kind of, you know, equivalent. They're getting down. They're coming down.
Right. And like anything else, you know, right now, like if you buy organic milk, it's pennies more than conventional. So most people can take that little extra step to get so much less chemicals in their diet. And now we're talking about in their fashions. We're going to take a little break right here, Beth, and we're going to tune into some stuff right here on Progressive Radio Network. I'd like to inform our listeners that you can get in touch anytime by going to naturalnurse.com, go to calendar to see our upcoming classes and events, or just email us to set up a private consultation or a private class or training for yourself in how to incorporate natural living into your career and your lifestyle. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the ancient Chinese science and art of acupuncture.
Acupuncture is a 5,000-year-old medical procedure involving insertion and manipulation of needles into specific points on the body. It is often applied to relieve pain during surgery and for many other conditions.
Acupuncture needles have been found in China that are over 4,000 years old. The first needles were made of stone. Later, bronze, gold, or silver was used, and today they are usually made from steel. Acupuncture was developed around the theory of special meridian points on the body connected to the internal organs, and that vital energy, or qi, flows along these meridians. According to this theory, diseases are caused by interrupted energy flow, and the stimulation of these points restores normal energy circulation. There is some scientific evidence of the existence of the meridians as a separate circulatory system. Studies were done in the 1970s by a Dr. Kim from Korea, where he injected radioactive dyes into the traditional acupuncture points. He observed migration of the dyes along the exact predicted path of the meridians.
How acupuncture works remains uncertain, but both Western and Eastern scientific studies on rabbits have shown that the analgesic effects are not simply a matter of suggestion. After the discovery in 1975 of endorphins, natural pain inhibitors in the body, some neurophysiologists suggested that the needles may trigger the release of these substances. American and Chinese studies have confirmed that placing acupuncture needles in the brains of dogs raises the level of endorphins in the spinal fluid.
Acupuncture is used today in most hospitals in China and by many private practitioners in virtually every country in the world, including the United States. The primary use is for analgesia, although ulcers, hypertension, asthma, and other conditions have been documented to respond favorably to this treatment. Chinese surgeons prefer acupuncture to the use of drug-induced analgesia because they claim it does not disturb normal body physiology and therefore does not make the patient vulnerable to shock. Brain surgery is especially amenable to this form of analgesia when it is necessary to keep the patient awake during the operation.
Although some modifications in the practice of acupuncture have been made, such as sometimes using a small electric current on the needle instead of the traditional twirling, acupuncture remains intact as an ancient therapeutic technique that has been used successfully for at least 5,000 years. Perhaps you'd like to add this piece of knowledge to your natural medicine chest.
And welcome once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, and we love joining you every week right here for The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z on Progressive Radio Network. Today, our guest is Beth Fitteni, and among the many other things that we talked about earlier in terms of her involvement in environmental protection, both personally and professionally, she is now the author of the book, The Green Wardrobe Guide, Finding Eco-Chic Fashions That Look Great and Help Save the Planet. And by the way, she has a blog and a website. You can find both at Green Inside and Out. Is that .com or .org, Beth?
.org.
Okay, so Green Inside and Out, spell it all out, the whole word, .org. And thank you so much for joining us today, talking about your new book, The Green Wardrobe Guide, Finding Eco-Chic Fashions That Look Great and Help Save the Planet. Where did you get that word, eco-chic?
Oh, I've worked with a lot of, sustainable clothing experts, along the way, you know, going to a lot of workshops in New York City. So it was going to be called Eco-Fabulous Fashions, but she said, no, no, it should be Eco-Chic. So I said, okay, well, she knows better than I do. But it's another point to make. I mean, these types of clothes that were made with hemp, and, you know, we can talk about some of the other fabrics, they used to look like potato sacks, you know, back in the day, but now they're really becoming stylish, and there's some beautiful clothing made with these fabrics, so it's really exciting.
Yes, that sounds great. So that, we talked a little bit about cotton. Now, let's talk about hemp, because I just went to a conference. I was a presenter at SoHo, which was a very large conference in Orlando recently, and I have to say that hemp and CBD is all the buzz.
Yes, absolutely. And it can be used for so many things. You know, hemp was used for generations to make rope and all kinds of things. It's a very fibrous plant. And a lot of people say, well, is this the same thing as the marijuana that you smoke? And it's not. There's actually a different, strain, I guess, of the, you know, different, what do you call it, part of the, you know, different species, basically, of this type of plant, cannabis. That only contains 0.03 to 0.05% of the chemical THC, that I can't even pronounce it, tetrahydrocannabinol.
Yep.
Versus the marijuana that you would smoke, which contains 3 to 20% of this substance. So you can't smoke your skirt, you know, but it's a very hardy, fibrous plant called industrial hemp. It can be harvested 3 times per year, so it's very productive for producers. And the fabric is sturdy and feels like linen, kind of. So it's a little on the rough side, so sometimes they actually blend it with other fibers to make it a little softer. But like I said, hemp is fantastic. It's been grown for at least 12,000 years. A little history about it, which is interesting. George Washington and Thomas Jefferson both cultivated hemp on their farms. And the original American flag that was sewn by Betsy Ross, which is in the museum now today in Washington, D.C., was also made from hemp.
That is interesting. I'll give you another piece of information that's Long Island-based. Where do you think the town of Hempstead got its name?
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
You see? Live and learn. We can learn from each other all the time. Yes. Look that up to add to your discussion points, because it's true. Hempstead, which is a very major town in Long Island, actually was a huge hemp-growing operation.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yep. I know. It was really a very popular material in early America for all the reasons that you talked about. And is it something that's usually grown without, you know, the pesticides and herbicides that we see on some of the other fabrics?
Yes, yes. And that's part of the point of it, too, is that it doesn't require a lot of inputs. You know, it grows like a weed, just like the slang term is used for it. So it really doesn't require a lot of chemicals, no. So it's normally, you know, if not labeled organic, it's close to it anyway.
Yes, that's really, really wonderful to know. And it's widely available now. Now, is all the hemp okay? Or is some, I mean, for instance, marijuana, a lot of it is sprayed with highly toxic chemicals. So what makes you sure that the hemp is not?
Right. Well, I guess the industrial hemp is more fibrous, and it really resists any type of pests. A lot of it is grown in other countries, like grown in Germany, where I know they have very high standards. And unfortunately, that is one of the reasons why it can cost a little more also, because we import most of it, since there's still quite a few restrictions here in this country about growing any kind of cannabis. Though things are changing, like you said.
Yeah, so it's mostly grown in places where they're not using pesticides, you think?
Mm-hmm. Yes, from my research, that's what I found.
Okay, but there's no way to be sure. There's not like you were talking about a certain something you can see on there where they're saying it's organically grown.
No, not that I've ever seen. And that's something that needs to change. You know, ultimately, I made a few different recommendations about where I think the fashion industry needs to go in general. And, you know, clearly we need to pay more attention to the environmental impacts and the wearer's health and the garment workers. But what's very important is standards and transparency, you know, the traceability of how things are handled along the supply chain. So that's one direction that I think, you know, needs more attention, and it is getting there. You know, there's a lot of interest in this issue in fashion schools, like Fashion Institute of Technology, for example, we have in New York City here, and Parsons. The young designers that are up and coming are learning these concepts and reducing waste as well. That's a whole other issue we could talk about. 85% of our textiles end up being landfilled. And creating methane because they're degrading. So the fashion students now are learning about cradle to cradle and circular fashion economies to reduce the waste of fabrics from the cutting room floor. So a lot of changes need to be made, and that's one of them is the labeling so customers can know what they're buying.
Now let me ask you something. This might not even be in your book. I'm not sure. I didn't see it. But I know you personally are a vegan and subscribe to a vegan lifestyle. Now, how do you feel about using wool? And what are the implications environmentally?
Sure, absolutely. So I have to say this whole issue of vegan fabrics was very eye-opening. You know, I knew a little bit before I was researching for this book, but it was pretty shocking. You know, most people don't realize that wool, is from sheep, obviously, and they have to be shorn to get the wool. But there's a process that's called mulesing that's often used in the sheep that are raised in Australia and New Zealand because there's a type of sheep that's used that has a very wrinkly type of, like, towards the end of their back, like sort of towards their butt, to be honest. And in there, they can grow, it can get dirt, and in there, believe it or not, grows flies, and they have, just a lot of dirt, and it needs to be removed. So what the farmers do is they do this process called mulesing, where they cut the back of the sheep off. So it's just really a grotesque type of process that's used in creating most wool that's, you know, commercially available, unless you're buying from a small farm. And,
yeah,
you know, the shearing
I've participated
it's not
personally.
A pleasant...
Yeah. I participated quite personally in a lot of shearing, mm-hmm. and I haven't seen that happening, so I never heard of that, but they usually just shear the sheep, and then the sheep runs off and lives to grow another coat.
Right, exactly, and if most ethical places would do that.
No, but it also in terms of the cost factor, because it costs a lot to raise another animal and wait till you could shear it again. So I'm not sure about the commercial aspects of doing something like that.
Right, and that does add to the cost. So, you know, in these commercial farms, they're not exactly treated humanely. And you know, the same thing goes for fur. Most people don't realize that there are fur farms where small animals are grown for their fur, and they're electrocuted. They put an electrode on their nose and their rear end, basically on their snout and rear end, and electrocute them to death. Even silk, they kill the silkworms. Leather is something where it's not just a byproduct of the meat industry, but it's also driving the meat industry. So, you know, down, for example, the feathers are plucked from the bellies of the geese and ducks. So all we think about is our nice soft pillow, but we're not thinking about how it's produced, and it's pretty cruel. So the worst thing that I found out when researching this book was about snake skin and alligator skin, because believe it or not, the snakes and alligators are also raised in captivity, and the snakes are raised sometimes in Indonesia and can be skinned alive. It's like an extra step to kill the snake so they just skin it alive. And it's just horrible, you know, to think about these things. And then they're used for these high-end bags and shoes that can cost thousands of dollars, you know, which look lovely, but we're not thinking about how things are produced. So one of the things I wanted to say on a positive note about this is that there are alternatives to leather now. One of them is called Pinatex, which is made from pineapple skin. And there's another one called Muskin, which is made from mushroom skin. So there's all kinds of innovation happening, which is great.
Oh, those are leather-like kind of things that would look nice, let's say, on a high-end fashion, and it's made from a vegetarian source. I never heard of that.
Yep, Pinyatex and Muskin. They're being used now for a leather alternative for shoes and wallets and all kinds of things, which is really cool.
Well, I don't know if I've ever seen, where would someone see that kind of material? Well, I know you could look in your book and you talk about it, but where would people actually find some of these fashions?
Yeah, well, a lot of times it's in small boutiques that cater to these kind of things where the owner cares about being eco-friendly and vegan. You know, vegan shops like Mooshoes carries things like this. And, of course, online. If you just put in the words Pinyatex or Muskin, you'll find all the products showing up right there, which is amazing. There's so many alternatives.
So you have to know to look for it. Well, that's one reason to get your book, because you list all the places to get these kind of things. And I have to say, on Facebook, since, you know, we're actually colleagues in person, but we're also Facebook friends, that I often see you sending out something of some very inexpensive things, you know, like organic leggings that are, you know, $10, $15.
Yep, exactly. I try to keep it real, knowing that cost is always an issue, but, you know, making it easy for people to find things. But yeah, it's so interesting. Like, there's a lot of clothing now made with bamboo. Bamboo is a type of grass that grows very rapidly, again, kind of like hemp, doesn't need a lot of inputs and chemicals. But they make fabric from it that's very soft, and it's very common to find that, especially in yoga clothes, in socks. It can even be used for towels and sheets, and it feels a little bit similar to rayon. So it's a very nice and soft fabric. And it's not perfect, because they do have to use chemicals to, you know, take the cellulose out of the bamboo and make it into thread, but at least it's a plant-based fiber. So it's more natural than polyester, for example.
Wow, there's just so much to learn, isn't there? Well, we're going to take another little break right here, Beth, so that we hear from our radio show station, which is Progressive Radio Network. That's PRN.FM. By the way, you can get the PRN app for free at wherever you get your apps. I don't get apps, so I don't know much about that, but you probably do. So get your app at the app store of your choice, and it's Progressive Radio Network. It is an app. It is free, and you can join us on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z and hear all the other fabulous shows right here on Progressive Radio Network. We also have a direct call-in phone line, which you can ask for any show on Progressive Radio Network. We have a very specific one for The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can email me and I'll get it back to you. And we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we will be rejoining Beth Vitenny, and we will talk more about her book, about the Green Wardrobe Guide, Finding Eco-Chic Fashions That Look Great and Help Save the Planet.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today, we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information. The kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one Progressive Radio Network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. go to PRN.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right, thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
This is Karen Hartglass, host of It's All About Food, and you're listening to PRN, your source for progressive, up-to-date, and inspirational information on nutrition and health.
Much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. Please join us at naturalnurse.com. You can comment there. You can look at calendar. You could go to Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And by the way, at this very moment, we are involved in a free EMF summit, and you can join in for free. There's 33 top holistic professionals, including yours truly, Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. I talk about herbs and ancient essential oils that can be helpful in offsetting the negative effects of electromagnetic fields. Dr. Mercola joins in. All kinds of people that you know are part of this free summit. All you have to do is go to naturalnurse.com, and right on the top of the page there, it shows you how you can join and get access to all the 30 EMF lectures. And as you know, if those of you have participated, and I know some of you had, we had about 300,000 people in our Remedies Summit, so I know many of you have listened to these things before. It's free now, and it's free for a particular period of time, and then after that, you can still get access to it, but you have to, you know, pay for it. So you really, really, the time to do it is right now. Just go to naturalnurse.com, right on the top, click on EMF Summit. There's no cost of doing so. There's also a lot of free gifts there, including a book that I wrote called Virility and Vitality. There's lots of other free gifts when you join. So I would say that would be a first step to take. Go to naturalnurse.com and sign up for the free EMF, that's Electromagnetic Field Summit. And you do need to know about that because 5G is coming to your neighborhood immediately. It is devastating. Work to protect yourself, your loved ones, and your family. And you can find out how by joining the EMF Summit. So thank you so much to our guest. Our guest today is Beth Fitteni. She is the author of The Green Wardrobe Guide, Finding Eco-Chic Fashions That Look Great and Help Save the Planet. And her website is greeninsideandout.org. So welcome back, Beth.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again.
Now, we're talking about, you know, quite a bit of things. And, you know, one thing that was interesting is when I recently saw you at, it was, I think, the food conference on Long Island, mm-hmm. the Sustainable Food Conference, right? And yeah. I was presenting there. You had a lovely booth there. And one thing about your book is that there's a lot of really great color illustrations so people can get a sense about how these eco fashions look.
Yes, absolutely. I basically took photos of my whole eco-fashion wardrobe So it's really fun. It's a nice, easy read. And I did want to show pictures of what the fabrics look like, because a lot of times when I give lectures, and people always come up to me afterwards and want to touch it and know what it feels like. But it's really amazing. Like, there's so many options. There's a few more I can mention. Like, one of the other fabrics that's really great is Tencel. It's actually Lyocell. Tencel is the name brand made by an Austrian company called Lenzing, and it's made of eucalyptus trees, and it uses much less water and energy than even cotton. So I think this is really an up and coming fabric, and it's made for, like I said, from eucalyptus trees. And Modal is another cellulosic fiber, very similar, and that's made from beech trees, and even big name brands like Ann Taylor are using it. So there's so many exciting different options. You can make fabrics from soy. Injeo is made from corn. We even have fabrics made of algae called sea cell fabric. And, of course, another option that's pretty common now, it's getting there, especially by companies like Patagonia are using it, is recycled polyester. So even though it's made from polyester, at least it's keeping it out of the landfill. Because this is another issue with polyester I should have mentioned earlier, is that when you wash polyester, especially fleece, like anything that's kind of like loose little fibers like that, when you wash it, it can go into the waterways because these tiny little microfibers go through the sewage treatment plants and can go out into the oceans, and then the fish eat it thinking that it's food. So the fish are ingesting it, and if you eat fish, you may be ingesting plastics. So it's just amazing how many connections there are.
It's probably definitely because of the huge amount of plastic that is floating in our oceans everywhere. Luckily, there's been some really good movies, and even on mainstream television, which is probably why, also there are beginning to be rules, and I know right in Suffolk County where you are, they now charge if you want to take a plastic bag with you from the store.
Yes, absolutely. There's some great films about plastics in the ocean. That's a whole other issue. That's something my organization, Green Inside and Out, is working on, because I happen to sit on the Suffolk County Single-Use Plastics Committee, again, with legislator Kara Hahn. She's a real pioneer on these things. And we just did a little campaign in the town of Huntington, where I live, to ask the restaurants not to use plastic straws, but to use paper straws instead. And we got at least 6 out of the 50 that we visited. We're going to do some follow-up. But it's a campaign that was started by the Surfrider Foundation out on the East End, where they've already gotten 40 restaurants to not use plastic straws because, they're right near the shore. And thankfully, the restaurant owners do want to be responsible, which is great.
Well, one thing I saw you have at your booth when I last visited you, looking also at your beautiful book, which we're talking about today, Green Wardrobe Guide, Finding Eco Chic Fashions, and that look great and help save the planet. I saw that you were actually selling glass straws for, like, permanent use.
Yeah, so people can buy glass straws. They even sell stainless steel ones or ones made of bamboo, like just a little, bamboo little straw. It's amazing that there are all these alternatives which you can bring with you, just like sometimes people are carrying their own cutlery, so you don't have to take plastic cutlery. You can bring your own straw, too.
And I actually love some really fancy chopsticks that I always take with me, because those wooden ones splinter.
Right, exactly.
And they're really easy. So that glass straw, I saw it. It was beautiful. Are you selling that on your website, Green Inside and Out?
Not yet, but very soon to be, yes. Because they've been really, really popular. People love the idea. So it's really catching on, which is cool.
Now, do they have any kind of little case? Because that's what I was wondering. Like, what do you do? Just take this glass straw and, like, where do you put it? It's going to get broken in the bottom of your purse.
I know. See, that's something that someone needs to invent. So maybe I'll have to get a patent on that.
Right?
We can work on it together.
just like my really fancy chopsticks, they come, sometimes they unscrew, and then they go into this very, very pretty little case, and they're in my purse all the time, and then I take them out of the case, you know, I'll wash them before I put it in. It's really very easy and convenient. And when I looked at that glass straw, that's what I said. I said, I'd love to have this, but if I just throw this, you know, in my bag, it's going to be broken by the next time I want it.
Right. But someone needs to come up with that. So that might be next on my project list.
Right? But it's certainly wonderful for home use.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
Keep it in your drain. And they were very, very pretty. And they actually added, I'll tell you what, they add an element of color therapy, believe it or not. Because when you pass liquid through colored glass, especially when you let the sun go through it, you're actually influencing the liquid with the vibration of that color. So that's just an interesting other addition to it that we can talk about another time. They were really lovely, and I haven't seen them before. Now, I know your book is chock full of all kinds of stuff, like what about bedding? You know, we're getting to the end, but we have a few more minutes. What about things that people sleep on in terms of materials and towels and things like that?
Sure, absolutely. So I do mention that as well in the book. You know, there can be fire retardant chemicals that are used in mattresses and sofas. So you can find organic cotton, even hemp-filled, you know, furniture and bedding. You can find bamboo sheets and towels, like we mentioned before. My futon is made with organic cotton. So it's just a matter of looking. There are a few companies out there like Earthsake. There's an eco mattress store. There's one called Avocado, White Lotus Home. These are all mentioned in my book. And also, especially for babies, believe it or not, a lot of fire retardants are used in nursing pillows and cribs, changing pads, you know, stroller seats, anything that has that polyurethane foam in it. And they're finding that these chemicals can lead to attention deficit disorder, hyperactivity, slow mental development. So especially around children, you want to be careful. And there's a wonderful resource I should mention, too. I'm part of the Just Green Partnership in New York State, which is a coalition of organizations working on toxins. And it's run by a wonderful organization called Clean and Healthy New York. And they have a campaign called Getting Ready for Baby. So if you look up Getting Ready for Baby, you'll find some wonderful resources there.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Beth, for being our guest and for all your work on behalf of people and our planet. You are tireless and dedicated, and you really deserve a lot of credit. And that you actually are creating change, real change, measurable change, you know, as indicated by many factors, including this book, which came out now, and also, you know, the signs that are physically going up in dry cleaners all over Long Island, which is going to shift everything. So, again, thank you so much. And thank you, listeners, for joining us once again to be part of the Progressive Radio Network family right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We'd love to hear from you. Get in touch at naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse. And until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.